Immersive technologies keep transforming how we tell stories and connect with audiences. But what will truly last after the first wave of excitement in the XR industry? How do we build something that still matters once the premieres and prototypes are behind us? This podcast is a recording of the live panel What Lasts? Building a Future for XR and Immersive Arts. It took place on October 31st in Leipzig during the Doc Exchange XR, the industry program of Doc Leipzig Festival, held in partnership with the British Council, Germany. This panel brought together XR producers, curators and cultural decision makers from Germany and the UK to explore how the field can grow in a more sustainable, connected and thoughtful way. How to fund immersive work long term, collaborate across borders and support the next generation of creators. Drawing from experiences in both the UK and German contexts, the conversation explored shared challenges, opportunities and insights that can help shape a more resilient future for immersive arts. The panel was introduced by Dr. Susanne Jaschko, Head of Arts Germany at the British Council, who reminded us that immersive culture grows through creativity, shared knowledge and trust. And as a part of her introduction, she also shared insights from the British Council's report on artists shaping technological futures. You can find a link to the report in the episode description. The discussion was moderated by Ulrich Schraut, Artistic Director of the VRHAM Festival and one of Europe's leading curators working between the UK and Germany, with speakers May Abdallah and Sarah Ellis from the UK, and Max Permantier, Paul Hauptmeier from Germany. You will hear more about their experiences and their relationship with the immersive industry in just a moment. My name is Weronika Lewandowska, curator and coordinator of Doc Exchange XR, and together with British Council Germany, we welcome you to listen in.
Hello everyone, and welcome to our panel, What Lasts? Building a Future for XR in Immersive Arts. I'm very happy to be here. Thanks for this wonderful invitation. It's exciting to be here with this wonderful array of speakers and experts around me. We have, to my right, we have May Abdallah, director and artist Anagram from the UK. Also from the UK is Sarah Ellis, director of creative innovation at the Royal Shakespeare Company. And then we have, from Germany, Max Permantier, funding executive for Film Fernsehfonds Bayern, and Paul Hauptmeier, composer and co-founder of Zimt Leipzig here in Leipzig. So, just setting a little bit of the scene before we come to a little bit of an intro of our wonderful panelists. I would say over the last decade, we've seen immersive technologies, VR, AR, mixed reality, everything in between, everything, all of these wonderful, weird things that we've been experimenting with. We've seen from moving from experimental art spaces into museums, theaters, classrooms, festivals. But the question today is, what actually lasts? Are we building a sustainable ecosystem for XR and immersive, or are these all just very beautiful prototypes and sort of series of explorations? And what do we need to do to change that? And for me, sustainability in this context is really not about the technology, about the hardware, or about innovation cycles. It's really about cultural continuity. It's about financial durability and social responsibility. And how do we make sure that these immersive stories that we tell are, and the structures that support them are going to be here for the long run and have real longevity? And all of that we want to look at under the lens of collaborations and cooperations between UK and Germany. I try to sort of cluster this because it's, I mean, to be honest, it's a very small topic, right? So I thought we're going to cluster it a little bit, also to make it a bit easier for us to talk about it. Firstly, I would love to talk about, where are we in 2025? Has XR grown up? What are the models? What are the artists? What are the sort of, what's the ecosystem that we work in? Secondly, we want to talk about collaboration and co-production. Again, really much under the lens of How does Germany do it? How does the UK do it? What can we learn from each other? And thirdly, we really want to look into the future and next generation. What kind of values will shape the immersive field, and what are we going to leave behind? Before we dive into these small questions, I'd love for all of our panelists just to introduce themselves very quickly, just so you get an overview of what they do, and also to get a better understanding sort of the ecosystem that we represent here. I would love to start with you, May.
Hi, everyone. Well, I had my time yesterday explaining quite a lot of what's going on in my head, but just maybe a bigger picture. So I run a studio called Anagram. I'll press the button once you tell me I can press the button. So I started Anagram 13 years ago. Prior to that, I was a documentary filmmaker, and Anagram's raison d'etre was to use immersive technologies to make nonfiction stories embodied experiences. So Anagram, although not everything we do is a documentary, is very much like geared around social impact and kind of cultural, topics that perhaps, are socially and politically relevant to people. So it's not all fun and games. And then here's a little video of the different kind of things. But, very much in the first 7 years of Anagram, we just threw, let's say, spaghetti at the wall. We played with whatever new tech was around, EEG sensors, Bluetooth mechanics. We just kind of enjoyed being a bit of a lab. And then in the past through 5 years, really, we've been kind of channeling a lot into what really now is kind of spatial computing. So anything that you can make with a game engine, so that we're kind of increasing our internal in-house reusability. So we can talk a bit more about that. As I mentioned yesterday, working on this trilogy of experiences. And I'm just, one of your questions was what's going on in 2025. So it's not as exciting, but it's kind of really thinking about reusing the IP that we've developed. So presently,
it is exciting.
Do you like that? Yeah. So Goliath was pretty successful kind of in terms of reach. It got 1 million downloads in 2022. So it was an exciting thing to realize it could reach audiences. It's a piece about a man's story about schizophrenia, and this is not actually Goliath. But since the following year, we developed an immersive projection version of that, and so now a lot of the kind of part of the investigation is like, what is this kind of out of headset experience? So we're working on like, what is interactive projections? Can we bring meaningful stories that aren't just kind of eye candy with some of the things we've already developed, and what does that look like? Answers to be revealed later.
Wonderful. Great. I'd like to hand over to Sarah to talk a little bit about her work.
Hello, everyone. I'm Sarah. I'm Director of Creative Innovation at Royal Shakespeare Company, and I always feel like a little bit of an interloper because really I'm theatre, but actually I like this stuff. And I suppose today what's really nice to be on the panel is to think about our XR in the context of like lots of different entertainment, cultural industries as well, and the change that they're going through. It's quite a weird thing because, you're kind of like the outlier within the theatre industry and you are the outlier within the XR industry. That can be an opportunity because it allows you to think a bit differently and contribute a bit differently, and it also means you get a different set of questions, which I've really enjoyed over the past 10-15 years of being in an institution. Often we talk about artists, but what about the producers? What about the administrators? What about the people that are building audiences? There's something around the ecology. Sometimes what we see on the surface, there's a huge amount behind the scenes around our infrastructure. How do we support those roles? How do we think about that? And how do we enable ourselves to look at craft rather than technology? When does it become a tool rather than a shiny thing, if that makes any sense? I think the XR industry are really cutting edge on that, and a lot of traditional art forms then learn from it. So how do we create a value of the XR industry and what it's putting into traditional ecosystems that are struggling right now. And that, I think, is something for us to talk about in 2025, about how we are like the pirate ship and a lot of these institutions are like oil tankers. So how do we highlight and showcase our strengths? Do you know what I mean? And shift some of that narrative. I'm also terrible at slides. But one thing I wanted us to think about today is the potential. So what's our net potential? And audiences, often traditional art forms, have a very manufacturing way of working. It's sort of like I make this, I put it out in the world. Where I think XR has got a huge potential is multi-platform. I think you just alluded to it. How do you create multiple platforms for your existing IP? How do you create it as live IP? If we're looking at sustainable models, that's quite it's quite a strength for the XR community to think about. So one of the things that we've been thinking about the RSC is how do we extend a story world? So we have these plays that are 400 years old, some of which are a bit boring, some of which are awesome. My point is that it's sort of like people have an opinion, but what if you change that story to be put in a format where it's one of the largest emergent growing industries, nascent industries such as gaming, and instead of thinking about how I'm a theatre and I project out, how about creating communities and worlds that then want to get a bit closer to you? It's sort of like, where do you want to be in the world? Who are you right now? What do you want to say? And how do we work with people that don't look like us, sound like us, and get us to shift our business as usual so that we can spark and think about what we have to offer? And I think that that's the hybridity of theatre and XR that excites me that we can talk about today.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. Next up, we have Max. Here we go.
Thank you. I'm just waiting for the presentation, but I can already begin. I'm Max. I'm funding executive for XR at the Bavarian Film Fund. At the Bavarian Film Fund, it's a regional fund. We do have like 7 regional funds in Bavaria, where 5 of them are funding XR. And we are one of them. But we do not only support film and games, but we also support XR. We support a whole lot of projects, like digital VR, AR, MR projects, but also performative projects, performative experiences, installations, and immersive sound projects. The budget that we have for 2025 is over 750,000 euros. They are provided by the Bavarian State Chancellery, and we do only have 2 calls per year. The next true decision will now be in December. Our goals are to support the creative talent and strengthen Bavaria as a media hub. We want the XR market to grow, and we want young talents to bloom, and we want to foster them. And we want in Bavaria, we want to keep a diverse culture, media culture. We primarily focus on art and cultural innovation. We can also act as a more economic fund, but for XR, but this is a different story. The success for XR in Bavaria is really deeply tied to co-productions, both international and within Germany, because in Germany, budgets are rising and are growing, and we need inner German connections and to work together to keep up with these budgets. But what we also do, what is an important part of our work at the Film Fund, is that we plan strategic events to connect the different creative bubbles. So we want to connect the film bubble with the game bubble, with the XR bubble, so they can learn from each other. And we want to raise visibility for XR people. And we are doing this on a national and on an international level. My take on what we have to do or what we should do is we see that too few countries in Europe are funding XR. So we think that we should share the know-how between these funding bodies, and so that not even creators learn from each other through co-productions, but also funding institutions learn from each other to provide better infrastructure for these co-productions. We also think that public funds must reduce the early risk to attract private investment, and we should pool all these budgets, regional, national, EU, private, to keep up with the budgets. What is important is that we should make co-productions and knowledge sharing a policy goal and not just a side effect. And for this, Europe really must unite to stay competitive against the US and China, because we think that innovation really needs collaboration and not isolation. What we see, and this is also the topic of the panel, that XR shines at events, at festivals, at installations, in museums, but it really fades too soon. There's no real long life for XR out there. We should support museums and cultural institutions to go immersive. We should create a dedicated distribution fund for touring and to create this visibility. And what is most important is we have to build alliances across Europe and let museums be anchor partners in all these projects. So yeah, that was it for me.
It's all set out. We're done. I know we can. And Paul, last but not least, please tell us a little bit about your work.
Yes, so thanks, and waiting for the slide. So my name is Paul Hauptmeier. I'm a composer and multimedia artist based here in Leipzig, and I'm also one of the funding members of CIMT, the Center for Immersive Media Art, Music and Technology here in Leipzig. As well as part of the artist duo Hauptmeier Recker. And I'm going to start with the CIMT. So the CIMT is an organization and venue that we founded 5 years ago. We are a small team, but we have quite an amazing space that we renovated ourselves that is now growing pretty big in, like, also, I think, in recognition around the media art scene in Europe. So what we do have, this is like our main hall. It's about 200 square meters. We have a 32-channel immersive audio system inside there, which is pretty special for like an independent venue that is not an institution. As well, we have the possibility. I think like this image is cropped. The picture should look different, but we have the possibility of 300-degree video projection as well. As well as other media technologies. We have the possibility of audience tracking now with a LiDAR system that is pretty great. And yeah, so we can do a lot of stuff. Basically, we could maybe cluster it in these three. And maybe one is missing in these three categories. So what we do is we do a lot of residencies and workshops. So knowledge sharing in immersive media is a big part of us. We have like a free AV lab is the title workshop series that is happening every 2 weeks and it's dealing with all sorts of media art forms. We do a lot of concerts and performances as well as exhibitions and installations. And maybe the one cluster that is missing here is that we do a lot of development in the media arts field. So many of the people of our team are actually developing cutting edge technologies in different parts of media art. So from immersive sounds to interactive movement tracking systems, etc. So this is in the east of Leipzig. If you want to come by, you're very welcome. Talking a little bit about my artistic practice. So this is the shared website of our artist duo, Hauptmeier Recker. So you find a lot of different projects. We work a lot in the field, or we're coming from composition, from music, but we work a lot in immersive media arts, and we have different approaches, I would say, to the topic of XR. And also using the ways that we know, like handheld displays, etc. But what we do is mostly try to think also outside of the box and use the technologies to create new artistic approaches towards it. And I wanted to give one example of one work that I created in 2022 for the Venice Biennial. So this is an augmented reality sound installation that is actually not using any tablets or anything. It's just this room where I create, like, divided the room into different walls through this lights, it's lasers. And the audience was actually able to move freely around the space with headphones, and everyone got their own renderings. So I was able to position different sound objects and compositions in the space, and there they were able to walk around and create their composition depending on their position in the space. And I just wanted to give a quick example. So here we are listening to the person that is running now into it. So this is her headphone. So you see, like, there was this really quiet now, but there was like this small kick happening, and then she can discover the space. And this next example, you see how she's entering the cone. And so the cone is kind of making this muffled effect on, like, blending out. So it's kind of like a cave that she's entering. And what you can also see is that the tracking is extremely precise. So because I'm not tracking the center of body, I'm tracking her ears. So actually, like, if the ears are... she's crossing this thing. Yeah. So she was just crossing the wall, and now she goes towards this one window. It's in Venice, so outside there's a harbor. And as soon as she approaches this window, she is actually listening to a live field recording of the outside harbor and can look at the harbor through, like, a filter foil and listening to this. And everything's rendered in 3D. There were also parts where the audience could talk to each other. So this was kind of like a hidden feature that when two people are standing in these two cones, suddenly with hidden microphones there, they can talk to each other. It's kind of like 20 meters in between, so it's... like an audio bridge in between these two things. So it was a very playful experience that at the same time, was talking a lot about sharing a space, sharing like some kind of a shared reality, but at the same time, you don't really know where the other person is in the space, what they're actually experiencing. So it's a lot about your experience in connection to the others. Yeah, and that's about it. If you are interested to see more of our works or about the ZIMT, here you find the website. I hope the QR codes are working. I didn't check, but yeah. Okay. So, thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you guys so much for that intro. So we know a little bit more about your practice and what you do. Coming back to our first part of the panel, looking at where are we at the moment in 2025 with XR and immersive. Okay, it's 2025. XR is no longer the future. It's part of the present cultural landscape, I would say. But the question is, has it really evolved from a promise to an actual practice? Are we building a zillion sector or still sort of a patchwork of different isolated experiments? I would like to look at this from three different angles. First of all, obviously, artistic practice. Where are we? Have we moved from experimentation to legitimacy? Secondly, looking at funding models, and Maxi already started talking a little bit about this. What are the funding models in Germany, in the UK? Are they building resilience, or is that also sort of having silos in different genres? We want to look at that. And thirdly, how do we measure a long-term impact? How do we actually know when an immersive work lasts? Again, small questions, we're throwing it out there. And we are going to sort of move around slowly. First of all, May, I would like to ask you a little bit. So your work really merges technology with very human themes. You look at sort of empathy, mental health, perception. And from your perspective, do you think that XR as an art form has matured? Are we at a point where immersive art stands alongside cinema, theater, visual arts, as its own sort of cultural form? Or would you say, is it still fighting for legitimacy?
I think that's quite a maybe low bar, actually. Yeah. I think that, luckily, I think it definitely is its own form. Okay. It's one of those things where you can't, I'm trying to think of something that's not a cultural form right now, just so I can think about what is not a cultural form. Sport? No. So, yeah, I think in a way it takes people believing in that it is for it to be. And I think the industry is so passionate about it. It's kind of created its own existence. I think I would just question whether it's the right name and it's the right signpost for audiences, right? Because it's too broad.
Exactly.
Is what I think. And so I'd say it probably is, but unfortunately it just centers technology, which has a branding problem and is even a worse branding problem now that Samsung have released their headset. And it doesn't speak to artfulness. It speaks to, it's fine if you want to tell a story about the future, because that's the like the narrative that the advertising kind of world speaks to. And how would you put the work that Max does and the work that I do in the same bucket? It's kind of, people aren't going to know what they're in for.
Actually, it's really interesting that you say that, because that's exactly where my question was geared towards. I had a look in my research at the website, British Council, Goethe Institute, etc. You have all these silos. You have cinema, you have visual arts, you have literature, but there's no distinct form. And we see the same with funding. I mean, there are a few exceptions, but you don't recognize this in the cultural canon. And this is kind of what it's geared toward. And I love what you just said, that the ecosystem and the industry and all of us who are working in this field, we are very passionate about this, because so we create our own kind of art form. But is it even what we want to do, that we have this little silo? And you just said it. But maybe you can elaborate on that. Where would you position your work?
It's kind of like telling people they love films by talking to them about screens and pixels. Yeah. You know, nobody's like interested in the game engines that filmmakers are using to create virtual production studios. Yeah. It's the wrong focus. And so I kind of don't want to talk about 2025. I want to talk about 2030. I want us all to have like a little bit of a moment and just imagine, you know, what it's going to be like. And for me, cultural, I gravitate as not as an artist, but as an individual, right? I know who I am as a person. I know I'm a fan of certain kinds of things. And I'm like a diehard fan of certain kind of documentary filmmakers, and I'll follow them to the ends of the earth. And, you know, what I want to do is to be able to find my tribe within this ecosystem. And unfortunately, the way that curation has happened thus far is that, you know, not everywhere, and obviously not with the wonderful Neuland, and obviously nothing that Ulrich's ever done. But it unfortunately gets people become lost. They don't know what the feeling is, and they're not looking for an artistic, a cultural experience is really about a feeling. So the reason we haven't done that is because it's kind of too small, right? Mm. Or we think it's too small. I don't know if it's really small, or if I don't know the barriers. I don't have to program anything, so you could talk about that challenge. I think you should answer some questions, by the way.
I know you will. I mean, it's an inherently interdisciplinary art form. This, I think, what you're also referring to. So it's really difficult to put in boxes, which I like, if you ask me as a curator. But coming back maybe to your pirate ship, and you've steered a very big ship. You've brought XR into one of the most prestigious institutions in the Royal Shakespeare Company. And you talked a little bit about this, but I want to elaborate a little bit more. How do you see the evolution of immersive storytelling from the perspective of a major cultural institution or an organization? What's changed? On the one hand, obviously, technically, I think this is also really interesting for an audience. We don't want to talk about technology all day, but really think about how does it change the way audiences perceive the work, and how does it change the way art is created? But also audience expectation and organizational mindset. Maybe you can talk a little bit.
Just about a few that. Things.
Yeah, very small. Very broad.
One of the things I wanted to pick up on is I think the XR industry has emerged through those who have had a sense of curiosity from all these different art forms that have come together, which is why it's quite hard to explain what it is, because it's actually a very, very diverse cottage industry, series of cottage industries, if that makes any sense. So you've got the pioneers of documentary, you've got the pioneers of theatre, got pioneers of visual art going, this is interesting to me. I want to be in it. It extends my practice. I can see something that is emergent. And so it's those that sort of have that elasticity around their practice. I think where XR is at the moment is it doesn't quite know where to go. It's like, do we all become one thing? Or I quite liked the freedom of the experimentation of it. Do you know what I mean? And also it's very nascent and emergent and persistently hard to define, actually, because it hasn't got those silos. And I think that the other side of that is that traditional art forms are very siloed. It's like, well, that's not theatre. That's not film. So you, do you see what I mean? It's sort of like there's a branding issue in that. And I think that if you pull back a bit and look at it from an audience perspective, really it's about the big shifts that we've seen are around convergence. It's around cultural spaces changing, how people consume culture has changed. I think we're in a moment of quite big nostalgia and sentimentality. Whenever we have financial crises, that is actually where audiences tend to go. They tend to go is, don't make me think about the realism of the world, but make me feel nice, or, you know, let me think about these things in a different historical context or whatever. But previous to that, the last 10, 20 years, we've been, feed me what the future looks like. Let me have a glimpse of that. And so we've got a lot of different elements of our ecosystem in flux. Mm. And the biggest danger is that we sort of like look in on ourselves and go, well, that must be wrong, or that must be wrong. It's sort of like contextually, we're in a moment of convergence and confusion, and some things will stay the course and some things won't. And so obsolescence becomes really interesting. When do you not need to use these terminologies? So in traditional contexts and institutions, they are in crisis too, in ways that they never expected to be. So they're shocked, if you know what I mean. They're like, well, we've always been around. Actually, you may not be around. You may not be around in the next 10, 15 years. And so you've got this clinging on of traditional culture right now where they can't imagine this world because it becomes a threat rather than a sense of curiosity. So it's like, how do I go back to those tropes and traditions? So I suppose when we take ourselves out and take ourselves out the first person of this, I think we can be kinder, actually, and kinder to ourselves and go, you know what, the XR community has achieved extraordinary things in the last 10, 15, 20 years. Let's sit with that. Let's just sit with that for a bit. We're all working really hard, doing the same thing all the time. We said this before. How do you start then thinking more strategically about, well, what are you good at? What are you good at? What could I bring to the table? How could I do this? And I think that's the beat. And I think in terms of traditional and institution, you kind of need to let them get on with their own crisis.
I like that.
You can't solve it all. And I think that understanding that actually the big shifts are, we have a generation coming through with a lot less hope than we did. We will be and are institutional to that generation. And those things will look and feel very different. And one of the things in the XR industry is like, I feel quite middle-aged, if that makes any sense to you. So how do I get out of that? It's true, am I old? But you know what I mean? But more my point is like, how do you create a culture of generosity and curiosity? Because I think that's what the XR industry has actually evolved from. But it's seen opportunity through technology and the money that technology has brought into that. And that's a very big truism too. Is that all right to say?
I mean, I love what you just said about sort of championing what we're good at, because we always keep talking about what we're not good at and what's not happening. That's a really interesting answer on the sort of the institutional and sort of the overall view. One other thing, and you mentioned it briefly, and I wanted to talk to you both about it, is audiences. You just mentioned sort of escapism, right? Mm. People really are looking to escape from the reality around it. But what I'd be interested from both, from May and Sarah, and I'm coming to you both in a second. So would you say that audiences are harder to surprise, or are they actually waiting to be surprised? Do you see a shift in audience demographics through that escapism, especially in this sort of XR immersive world?
Never underestimate an audience. It's not about surprising them, it's about they surprise you. I think the relationship with audience is often, in any art form actually, it doesn't matter whether it's XR or theatre or film or whatever, you don't create enough space or gaps for their own agency in it and their own sense of imagination. I think sometimes photorealism of the technology that we're looking at, I remember some really lovely conversations when we were doing The Tempest, where we were like with Imaginarium, who were doing the game engine work, we were like, could you turn off gravity? And they were like, no, absolutely not. We were like, we just want to turn off gravity because we think it will do something to the character. No. Took a week and it did. And then we didn't give it any feet, like the character any feet. And then my point is that you can audience's capacity for imagining is way more than we often as makers give credit for. And so really you've got to meet them halfway, I think, and anticipate where they're at. And half the, when you talk about cultural value, sometimes work isn't just quite the right time, if you know what I mean. And it doesn't mean it's bad work, it just means if it was out 18 months later it'd have a different reception or whatever. Musicals are a classic example. They come out in the wrong season, or they're not positioned in the right way, and they'll fail at the box office. But if they do it 5 years later, so it's hold on to your scrapbook and hold on to the pieces that aren't quite there yet or isn't the right time. It doesn't mean that an audience isn't going to get it. It means it's not the right time. And that's a different thing.
May, what does your scrapbook say about audiences? Do you see a shift? No, honestly, do you see a shift in how audiences react, and especially with the trilogy now? You can probably track
I
that.
Do a lot of audience research.
Yeah, no,
yeah. I can bring some of those insights that I think are more general, maybe some truisms, which I'm just going to make up on the spot. But one, I would say, you can take anybody on a journey, but you have to meet them where they are first. And I think we have really good instincts as humans in a room about what the etiquette that is necessary to be able to get somebody to be interested or involved or safe. And somebody was talking about a project that's here and talking about kind of it was their first project working with VR. They had made it at film school. And they were talking about a breathing warmth into something. And I think that at some point, there was a moment where there was lots of panels about why there's so many women in XR. And I started fantasizing that actually women naturally are kind of often in the position of like hosting or like, you know, understanding space and how to welcome somebody into space and go on a journey with them. So there's a degree where I would kind of echo that, don't underestimate, but but greet people and meet them. And then I do think, so there's a lot of skepticism and, you know, somebody also mentioned yesterday, like one bad roller coaster ride. I think there are lots of things that we can do, which are probably more around access questions about, you know, having a screen in a place where people see what's being casted. I think there's like genuine anxiety, especially like neurodiverse audiences, often there's a kind of correlation between like anxiety about entering VR. There's loads of interesting work that could be done just around comfort, which isn't kind of the usual like thinking about sickness, but thinking about safety. And there is also a kind of, I say, a connection between anything that's game related and a fear of failure. So, I think the reason I really kind of, because, you know, Anagram was just supposed to be an experiment and then I was going to go back to making films. But what I loved was realizing that everything needs to be really, really calibrated to humans. So there's a real sense where, you know, there's often like six or seven like wildly different iterations of a interaction, and it's like, well, this was too boring, this is too challenging something that we did at the Tower of London, where we wanted people to think about Edward Snowden in a complicated way, where we asked, oh, that's my cue. Anyway, so that is my summary.
That was a really good summary for sort of the state of XR, I feel. I would love to move a little bit to funding and sustainability. Max, from your vantage point at Film Fernsehfonds Bayern, you're kind of shaping the foundation of immersive work in Germany in terms of finances. Can you elaborate a little bit, and you did that in your presentation, but a little further, what XR projects are getting supported at the moment? What do you see also, what kind of shift you see? And what makes in your sort of in your organization's values a project sustainable? How do you measure that, basically?
Yes, that's not that easy to answer because it's shifting all the time over the
years.
That's
also part of the answer, right?
Yeah. But when I began working at the film fund like 3 years ago, we had a lot of projects that were like smaller regional projects where people were experimenting with XR, projects that were more educative and or historic. After like last year, in fact, it was last year, we decided that we wanted more projects that could make revenue, that could make an money back, in fact. And we decided that we wanted to do more co-productions and to have more that we wanted more projects that could create visibility for the region and for the fund, in fact, for the creators that are living in the region. In fact, it's quite it's not that easy to answer. For creative projects, we are looking for more visibility. For economic XR projects, we are looking for the right partners that are in it, like hospitals, for example, schools that are also investing, and then it's all about how financing is being made.
And do you also facilitate these conversations, or do you just tell the projects, please do find a good partner? You really actively facilitate this.
Yes. I'm doing this together with in Bavaria. We have the XR hubs. They are being led by Silke Schmidt, and she's doing all the location-based work for Bavaria. And we are working closely together to get all the people to the right partners. In fact.
Yeah, great. And Paul, I mean, CIMT is a hub for experimentation. You talked a little bit about the different strands that you're looking at. What models of collaboration or kind of institutional support do you see working for your own institution? And how does it also help sort of advance the practice of the artists?
So what I would say is that we definitely would need some more institutional fundings, also in the sense, like not as us only as an institution, but in the sense of long-lasting 3-4 year projects, for example, XR. Like if we say that we want to really facilitate artists to work in our space with certain XR technologies, we have a lot that they can work with. We have this audience tracking system, we have iPads, whatever, but it needs so much, we need to find a position of how to translate these possibilities to the artists that we are inviting. We do a lot of residencies and so on for the artists, but actually to be able to do a sustainable art program around XR, I think in our space, we would need to have a funding that is not like a project funding only for one thing, but that facilitates us to have a positional person in our institution who can deal with these technologies and also the fast changes like in these technologies and keep on doing this. And I think so. For me, I would say, like as a curator in this venue, what would be really amazing is to have a funding situation where we are not funded for one specific project, but we are funded for what we do, for like enabling artists to show interesting new approaches towards XR, and this over a course of a couple of years.
But are you institutionally funded by the government here, by the city?
No, exactly. That's our problem. We are at the moment 100% based on project fundings.
Oh,
so
wow.
It's okay. Like every year, it's a new approach mm-hmm. to apply for money. And yeah, it's,
okay. Well.
So I think, and we need the sustainability, to survive in the long run, of course. But I think like this is true, of course, for us as an institution. But also speaking about like the development of XR that is just so fast, and if we want to make it sustainable, we also need to keep on working in this. Mm-hmm. I mean, if I do a project and then I do a pause for 2 years, then I'm I have to learn so much new things.
Yeah, for sure.
And also, but another thing that I would like to add, also maybe a bit going back to the question before, where are we now? I would also argue a little bit that what we already discussed, XR is such a multidisciplinary art form, and that today maybe what changed is that we are, in a sense, we can argue a little bit from a post-digital perspective towards this, because when I think of how we might show XR project in our venue, or how also I deal with XR projects, it's that it's not necessarily has to be framed like this, but we learn from XR and we integrate these technologies, but also we integrate these approaches, these concepts of like how do we change perspectives, like for the audience. And when we think of what can XR do, it is an immersive art form, it is an interactive art form, it can be a playful art form if you want, and all of these kind of things can be integrated in any type of artistic performance, production, installation, whatsoever. And this, I would say, is also where we are now, that it doesn't have to be so distinguished mm-hmm. as an art form, but it is something that we have, that is there, and that we can integrate. But at the same time, it's a very specific knowledge that is still growing so fast and developing so fast, and we need people who can maintain this. If we are talking about institutions, we need people who have the possibility to work on this continuously.
Actually, kind of comes back to the question, how do we talk about this as an industry or about ourselves, right? How do we frame these? I'd like to move on a little bit on sort of the third subject I want to touch upon, is sort of ethics, inclusion, accessibility. And the first question is a bit geared, again, to Sarah and May for the UK environment. We have this initiative now. It's called Immersive Arts, a UK Immersive Arts Programme. It's been launched in 2024. For those of you who don't know, it's quite a lot of money that has been put out on the market. And there are a few people who are leading on this initiative, and they give out grants to different projects so people can apply to that in different sort of rosters. There's been just the second funding round, I think. It's funded by the Arts Council and by different government organizations. And it's one answer, I would say, to many of these questions we've just discussed. I would love to hear a little bit about, because they have been very, very vocal about sort of looking at very inclusive practices, looking at diversity, accessibility. Do you feel, and maybe you can't answer that, it's really an open question, do you feel that this has advanced how we speak in the UK about XR immersive in terms of accessibility, diversity, inclusion? Have you seen these practices sort of evolve out of these kind of programs? Or maybe you have other initiatives that you can talk about that really sort of foster this in the UK?
I think it's probably a bit too early see the impact of immersive arts. It's fantastic. So, they've really centered that the language, well, they've done two things which I really love, which is they've kind of defined immersive as interactive, which I think is really a helpful kind of audience. Like what is different about this? I have to do stuff. That's kind of simple. Mm. And then they are they're doing a lot of work in terms of finding new people who are just haven't got a practice in a different kind of art form that might be trying something out for the first time. So it's a huge amount of money, but it's kind of being it's like loads of £5,000 and 15 and £3,000 or £4,050. So it's an interesting strategy. In a way, what we're talking about, I don't feel is kind of connected to that. That's kind of the groundswell. Mm-hmm. That's more your comment of how do we stop it feeling like a big middle-aged industry, which is you bring loads of kids along. Yeah. But then in terms of access, it's great to have people who haven't, who are just coming with those, let's say, their own prejudices against what is inclusion and what isn't inclusion. So up until this point, there's like, yeah, I can only talk from virtual reality, but the, you know, they're very minimal kind of practices around how to think about inclusion. It's kind of features first, access second, and there's a whole movement around access first, features second.
Yeah, I mean, I think access and inclusion is much more pervasive in its like impact, and I think one of the things I worry about is if you're using an art form to be more inclusive and accessible, because I think the XR industry does have some quite problematic accessible or do you know what I mean, just some of the technology it uses and such like. So I think that the intentions around this and to draw it into the conversation and the design, like it's like the design of it rather than the thing that comes later. If you go, oh, and now we'll badge on access inclusion, I think if it changes who makes the work, who's it for, I think that you have to have a much more pervasive conversation just generally about that. And what does I think that it's not a tick in the box exercise and you've solved it. It's a perpetual conversation that's really about why we make the work we make.
And for who, and
it's a very expansive conversation. And I think whenever we talk about these things, I'm more interested in who, like listening, if that makes any sense, and who's in the room or not. But I think immersive arts is one thing. It's like one cog. And sometimes on programs, you think, well, that's a solution. We've done that. Great. Well, was that a success or not? And that's not, like, I think May's point is it's too early to say whether this will have had the impact it needs. It could be like, let's judge it in the next 10, 15, 20 years. Some of this work will, it does take that amount of time. And I think that's where the festival models become very problematic, because you're like, oh, I've got a festival. Right. I'll put some work out there. It's a first. It's this. It's sort of like I kind of want the industry to get to the point where it stops skimming its text messages and emails and goes a lot deeper. Mm. And like, I want to see the ideas come back. I want to see the scrapbooks of artistic ideas come back. So it's not always about the first. It's about, do you know what I mean, iterative work. And I hope that the Immersive Arts Programme can start that, actually, and it gives people time and space to create some work that then what the sector needs to do is go, well, what happens if you give artists 100K, or what happens if you give artists more? Do you know what I mean? How do you scale up?
There's also this other side of immersive. So immersive arts is really run by the very best good people of England. Their hearts and their minds are in the right place, and they're the best organisations there are. And in a way, it's a bit, almost like a kind of response to like Black Lives Matter and loads of institutions being really appalling, and mainly London-based institutions like not getting it like over and over again, and nothing really changing. There's this other thing which I was thinking about when we were talking about your fund, which is, you know, funds are really political things. Famously, that the challenge with immersive arts is they've had so many applications. And you could read that as loads of people want to make immersive art, or you could say that, like, artists will apply for anything that's got money. And so, you know, what are we doing if you're kind of saying, like, and I've got so many people who just call me up being like, I want to apply for this, can you talk to me about it? It's like, well, you know, 5K, you're not going to get much change from that. Is it kind of like the right thing to just bring kind of earnest, naive, hopeful kind of cannon fodder into this world where there's like they're kind of just going to do their prototype and then nobody's going to help them any further? So it's kind of, I mean, I know immersive arts are going to work really hard to like unlock the next bit of funding, but another massive pot of money that got dropped in the immersive industry in the UK is this thing called CoStar, which was very different. It's kind of meant to be like to support the industry, but it involved making some virtual production studios, which I'd say a lot of people had questions about does this go out on YouTube? Lots of questions about like, well, you know, it becomes, it, there's a gap, isn't there, which is like what 5K might introduce to somebody. And then, you know, like I'm still here 12 years later because I have a very, I'm very bad at giving up, or like, I've never dumped anybody. I've only ever been dumped. Like, I'm just a kind of, I'm as tenacious as a pit bull terrier, you know, and that's just my personality. But not everybody's going to have that. It's going to feel very disappointing for so many people who have just kind of followed this path that is a dead end.
Mm. But as you said, it's sort of one specific, it's more of a trial that we can really see and see what's going to stick, what's going to be there in the long run. Maxim Paul, how do you see that in Germany? What are the sort of public funding structures that you feel integrate ethical or sort of social responsibilities? Is that actually a conversation that we are having? Do you see that happening maybe also in your...
Well, yeah, first I have to say that that now you have the fund, and that this is great. Even if the people just get like £5,000 or so, it's a very good start, because this opens up partnerships for co-productions, because otherwise they would lose all their shares from the project. So even if you only bring like €50,000 to the project, this is a great start, because this opens up co-production countries like Luxembourg, France, Netherlands, Germany, Belgium. I think that we will see a lot more great projects coming from the UK because of this fund right now. And for your question, it's not something that we really discuss actively at the fund, because we are looking more at infrastructure and try to build the infrastructure for Bavaria. I guess all these questions are coming second there, because first we need the infrastructure, we need the market, we need distribution, and then we will talk about diversity.
That is a very interesting sort of take on this, and I'd love to hear your thought also as a maker specifically. I also want this to be very controversial, so I have a very different view, but I'm just the moderator. So I'd love to hear your thought on sort of accessibility and looking at audiences from a different perspective. Is that something that you would want to see in a sort of a funding application that you have to put in?
You mean to have specific, like, fundings that are specifically for...
Either that, or should that be a criteria that is part of a funding structure? Because we look at different demographics, we look at different people who should have access to this kind of work, and we're excluding them because we don't have that that possibility to look at these grants.
Yeah, of course. I mean, I always think like you have to definitely... I mean, hopefully, I think the juries already consider these kind of things while they're selecting art projects, maybe, I don't know. But it's a bit, I don't know, I think like for me it's a bit difficult to answer these questions, because like I don't know so much about how these different funding organizations will distinguish from each other. I definitely think that it's a big and important topic for XR. I mean, accessibility has so many different layers to it, and I think one that is maybe also like... one way where we try to get in XR is to have a democratization of XR experiences in a way that, you know, like all these kind of public interventions that were done by people like in the XR community really early on, you know, like people doing, I don't know, interventions in MoMA and say like, okay, we can do like an art exhibition here in MoMA, even though like it's not an official part of the MoMA, or like we do an intervention in Venice, all these kind of things. They are these approaches, but until now, like, it never really works, because there's a multi-platform problems, whatever. Mm. So I think like this is something where we could get actually that XR can become accessible for anybody with a smartphone, for example, like projects in the streets. And the other way is like inclusive diversity, these kinds of art forms. And I think there's a lot of potential. How this should be reflected in applying for fundings, I'm not so sure if I can answer this question.
We're going to move away from this because also it's a topic in its own.
I just want to add something. Yeah, yeah. Because accessibility in form of bringing projects to museums and or bringing them to cinemas, to places, to cultural places and institutions where people can watch them and where we can show them, this is very, very important. Mm. And I think this is also something that we have to really work on. I know that that in the Netherlands, there's this program where they bring the projects to the cinemas. We tried this, or we proposed it to like a big cinema multiplex company. At first, they were interested, but then when they heard what this really implies, they just didn't want to do it anymore. Yeah. So there's a lot of work in Germany to do that.
Yeah, that's really about sort of giving audience the chance to see the work. I think the point that I was also very interested in, because I see working between the UK and Germany, there's a very different sensibility also, around accessibility and inclusion, especially for audiences have special needs or different needs. You touched upon this very briefly. And I found it so interesting how differently these two countries are talking about this. I work with the BFI Film Fund, but also for the Moin Film Fund in Hamburg. And just looking at sort of funding applications and the language that is used, it's very, very different. And it's, I think it's something that we can both really learn from each other. And this is why I wanted to bring this topic up. But we're going to move on to collaboration and co-production. We've already talked a little bit about this, but I feel, I mean, XR is inherently very interdisciplinary. It sits between film and theater, design, gaming, code. Collaboration is really at the core of what we're doing, as a maker, but also as a curator, as a producer. But co-production, especially across borders, can be super messy. I think we all know this. We have different funding systems, different languages, legal framework, artistic cultures. How do we collaborate sustainably and not just for one project, but we're talking about an ecosystem at the moment? We're not going to solve this in this panel. I'm sorry about this, but I would love to open this conversation as really a question to all of you. Why would you feel that co-production really matters for XR right now? Why is sort of an international kind of collaboration offer, or what can it offer actually that national ecosystem can't? You started, maybe you want to touch upon this a little. I think you're the expert really for the collaborations and co-funding.
Well, yes, I think it's two things. First, it's budgets, because now we are seeing projects with budgets up to 1.5 million, and they are very difficult to produce, and you need the money from different countries. I think Paula from... from Berlin, the Berlin Film Fund, we had a shared project, Mouse VR, from Renard Film, that had like three regional funds in Germany and two other co-production countries in it. And the producer said it was hell. That was just so difficult to produce. But producers in XR have to take that challenge. They just have to, because otherwise they can't really produce like these big mainstream projects. And the second thing is that it's about knowledge sharing. That's what you said. It's not only about institutions that can learn from each other, but also people that will learn from each other and how they see this medium and see the technology and what you can do with it. When I started in XR, I was very shocked that XR people were living in their own bubble. They were doing everything digital, but they only met with like a handful of people. And me coming from filmmaking, we have so many network events all around the world. And we are going there and meeting new people, getting these co-productions going. And I think this is very, very important for XR people to come to these events that we organize. We will pay for food and drinks. You just go there and meet new people. And what is really important, you should go to the markets, to the different markets, to Venice, to Paris, to New Images. It's so important to go there, meet the people, meet the projects, and also think about what you want to do in that business.
Looking at the core of what we try to sort of establish today, the collaborations between UK and Germany, or the differences, do you guys have thoughts on this, or maybe practical examples where maybe collaborations have worked between the UK and Germany, or where you think there is more potential on sort of this cross collaboration? Do you have any?
But we didn't fund a project yet that okay. has been an
UK-German right?
co-production. But that was the problem, because there is no funding involved from the UK. Yeah. So so nobody really looked there for co-production, yeah. because why should you do a co-production with a country that can't bring any money to the table?
That is fair.
I recently did have my interview with the BFI Doc Fund, and they said, why do you need this money? I said, so I can go get co-production money.
Good.
And they said, why do you need co-production money? You're like, it's clearly not on your radar. Yeah.
It's good to know.
What I think would be, so the co-production, I think, takes things out of prototyping to working at the scale that you need to be at in order to manage a co-production. You need to be thinking about a project you're going to do in a year and a half. You know, you need to know that you are still going to be in this industry in a year and a half. It's a very different time scale, you know, and the groundwork. I kind of fell into a pretty nice co-production relationship in Goliath and Impulse. And I have to say, it's more and more challenging now, because everything's more challenging when people are under pressure. But I think there are some really simple things that it feels like you could do. I like a spreadsheet with the country, the fund. I'd like to know about the tax credit benefit in each country. I had a good meeting with someone from Bayern in Venice who told me, only spoke to me about tax credits, and I was really happy to hear that information. And it would be really helpful for there to be like templates for contracts for XR. So we kind of reuse film ones, and then we spend quite a lot of money on legal fees to each of us kind of deal with stuff. And like right now we're in a sticky place where we just want to talk about prototyping, but you would never enter a co-production with somebody who doesn't want to make a full feature but wants to just... So there's like really practical legal reasons. It's not just about funding. Or meeting over coffee, which is, a guidebook.
That's a really practical idea, and I really love that, really having sort of a spreadsheet to really better understand the different funding structures. And I feel that in the EU, there's more happening in that regard, and I think through Brexit, and I feel that also working with the BFI, I feel sometimes we get so separated, and some funding schemes just don't apply for the UK anymore. I would like, looking at the time a little bit, I would like to move away from sort of financing co-production. Let's look into the future a little more. Future Next Generation. Let's fast forward a decade, 2035. I mean, we all look at all of these new tools, AI, spatial computing, brain-computer interfaces. In a way, they reshape immersive creation. I see this as a curator, that artists are working very differently with the tools they have. But how do we ensure that this field really evolves with the ethical, with social, with environmental awareness? And really, it's very much, and you said that earlier very beautifully, how do we bring sort of new generations with us? You talked about us being sort of the middle-aged industry. You said that? No. It's totally right. Because we always say, okay, we are this, we are working these new technologies, so we're going to attract these new audiences. Like all the theater companies, all the museums that come to me as a curator and say, oh, we want to have new audiences. Let's try something with AR. That's not going to work, obviously. So what do we need? Like, what do we really need in terms of creators, in terms of institutions, in terms of sort of support resources? And Sarah, I want to ask you first. We've been talking about this earlier very briefly. You're working on a study called Future of Performance Institute. It's funded by the UKI in the UK. And I think it's looking, if I understand correctly, it's looking at how do we prepare the next generation of creators to think both creatively but also critically about XR and immersive and AI. What kind of is the educational role that you look at in this study?
Oh, goodness. It's a feasibility study, really. It's a think piece around what do future institutions look like. Mm. In the 1960s in the UK, they were demolishing a stately home a week, which I find really interesting because I think we're not far off that sort of level of... We're in these moments, if you know what I mean, where the world is really shifting very quickly and such like. So, what we were trying to look at, or have been trying to look at, are what are the things that matter? If you were going to make an institution from scratch, what would it look like, and how would that be, and how would artists be driving that? And so a lot of things we're thinking about are not necessarily making or the product, but actually what constitutes the what you need to make nowadays, if that makes any sense. Mm. So I talk about the stately home thing because what happened was we had these buildings, but they just were just unfit for purpose. They were too expensive to run. No one was really, you know, going in them. And I think we are in that moment where that our funding is going into keeping the lights on in these buildings, if you know what I mean. So you have a very different discourse here where you're like, we need funding to keep our buildings going, have a new elevator, have a new this, have a new automation system to make it catch up. But you never get the time and space to step outside of the saving it and go, imagine what if. So what would our buildings look like, or what would our what do we need to make our work now? So some of it is sincerely about what world do we live in today, and would we need physical spaces in the same way? Mm. You know, do we need it to be a physical space, or could it be much more dispersed? And I think it's really hard to make right now. We're making something at the moment, which I'm really proud of in how we've approached it. It's a very equitable IP. It took us about a year to do the contract, it's not worked in an institutional way at all. And it's a genuine collaborative agreement and collaborative model, shared fundraising, but we are an institution and the other company is a very small studio. So how do you have equity in that, if that makes any sense? So we have these conversations all the time. And I think that's what the XR community does, is it brings forth these quite difficult, meaty questions that traditional art forms don't quite do, because they're how do I keep my existing model going? And I think if we had more conversation between the traditional and this XR community and put that in the middle, and that's what this feasibility study is about. And so it does provide tension as well as, you know, and actually change is tense, if you know what I mean. Change does that. But what we're finding is that we need community more than ever. And what does that look like? We need shared resources more than ever. So when you're talking about co-production, actually it's across the board. We need distribution. Like, you're still building, in 10 years' time, are we still going to be building the car, the road, the scenery? Are we still going to be doing that? Or will we have landed on some of those things? So it's easier for me to speculate what 2035 is than actually 2026. Mm-hmm. Our budgets are very, very tight, if that makes any sense. I want in 2035... to be not doing this as much and actually being celebrating some real achievements and people having had success, this work, you know, having a successful ecosystem. And I really, really do think that. I think that one of the problems with 2025 is that for the last 10, 15, 20 years, people have been working really, really hard and by this point would have hoped to have got that payback. And we're not there yet. And we're deep in that despair of change. And I hope in 2035, that's where we get to. But it will be about convergence, and it will be about how those stately homes have reimagined or not been with us. And then what is here in this XR community. And what I'd like to see is that XR community come to the middle on that so that we can converge those things. The most successful projects that we've had is I've brought old traditional audiences in through the Shakespeare and out with the technology, and I've brought a younger generation of audience in through the technology and out with the Shakespeare. Mm. And I've asked younger audiences, what was your favourite bit? And they're like, the drinking scenes. No fucking technology. Excuse me. And that's the convergence bit now. We are in a generation that have grown up without the internet and a whole generation that have grown up just with the internet and the fractiousness there, the fraction that that can cause. So it's those bits. What are the convergence pieces that will really help?
Mm. Paul, drawing on that, you're actually building a new institution here with everything of that in mind. And as far as I understand, it's also very much rooted in community. We talked a little bit about sort of what's the scene here in Leipzig. I found this super interesting, what you said earlier in our preparation. Looking at 2035, what would you feel, in the best possible way, you get all the resources, how would your institution look like and what kind of communities would it serve?
Yeah, so first of all, I would say that ideally, we are still there as a physical space because I think like physical space is super important to have in 10 years. Not for us, but like really for the community, for the art scene. And so in what I imagine in terms of XR in 10 years is really that it's, as I said before, so much integrated in all different kinds of art forms. Mm. And it's kind of not, we are not looking at this as a technology, but we are looking at what do we want to achieve and as an experience, as an artistic experience for the audiences, and we just integrate this seamlessly into other art forms and pieces. What kind of community we are doing this for, how I imagine this, it's kind of like it is already just growing. So we want to be an open space where people can discover new art forms, can discover amazing pieces, also established art forms. We also don't have to be always new. We don't always have to show something new. It is on the one hand, I would say it's important for us as an institution to be a place where you can consume art, but also where you can produce art, where we want to keep on developing. Like this development aspect is super important for us, and knowledge share, but also in a social way to just have exchange about everything. So for us, this the social space, having a bar also, we had before, we didn't have an extra separate bar room. It was integrated in the main hall. Now, since 1 year, we have a room in front where we have a bar and restaurant kind of situation. And this is so important, for a venue. I think that for us, this was a big step because now you have a space where you can really, even in winter, if it's cold and it's a big industrial building, so it's cold inside the exhibition halls in winter, but we have a warm space where you can exchange afterwards and so on. I think this is really important. But also what has always been super important for us as an institution, kind of like a main also starting point of why we did this, is that we find that accessibility for artists in these immersive sectors outside of institutions is super hard. If for example, I'm as a composer, if I talk about immersive audio and being able to play on a 32-channel high-quality sound system, I had the opportunity, because I was studying at a music school, and I was able to use these facilities. Mm-hmm. But so many amazing musicians who are not from this academic world, they never had the chance, and it's super difficult for them to go into institutions, to be in a theater where they have the possibilities to learn these features. So I think this is for us always and will always be an important part to also open the space and open all this technology and all the knowledge that we have to engage new productions.
Yeah, great. I'm a little bit mindful of the time because I also want to open up for questions if there are any. But I just want to do a very short round as sort of a closing moment. And each of you should answer this. So if you could choose one thing that should last from the XR community or from the industry that we're looking at the moment, what would you want to still be there in 2035? And what should not be there anymore? We start with you. Yeah.
Well, I think that the community should stay bold and curious. That's the most important thing to create good projects. And what should not stay is the fragmentation of the business, in fact.
Yeah, solid. I think what I... So I came into innovation because I am allergic to institutions that can't change. And so I'm interested in this being a critical space where people, some of that kind of the way documentary has kind of come through a lot, makes me feel safe here about the ethics, or the ethical questions that this community asks. So I want that to be there. What I don't want to be there is the necessity to work for evil tech giants.
Good, I like that. Sarah?
There's so many things I want to be there. But I want, actually, I want to see more people. Actually, I want to see a broadening out, an expansiveness and a generosity, if that makes any sense. So I kind of, what I don't want to see is the same tropes. I don't want to get us caught up. That's what I'd like to see. I'd like to see an So I think the two are connected. Often they are, aren't they? I'd like to see an unlocking, an openness and an expansiveness rather than... I don't want it to become a club. I want it really genuinely to be expansive. And then the thing I don't want is us to get into the tropes of... you know what I'm saying? I can't think of one right now. Yes, exactly. Yeah. I would like to. I'm a pathological optimist, really, and so I'd really like to see this industry really shine, because if, like, for what everyone's put in it. But one of the things I've learned is that you stand on the shoulders. So where you work is what you need to do now, and if I was thinking 10 years back, where I was in 2015 and where I'd want 25 to be. In all frankness, I would have wanted to be much further, but a pandemic happened and a recession happened and lots of things happened. And that's the biggest thing I've learned, actually, is that it really shifted from an innovation perspective. It wasn't me making an organisation change through shiny technology projects and going, woo, brilliant. It was actually much more fundamental. The innovation piece was much more fundamental, and I think that beat for me is one of the biggest learns of what 2035 could look like. I hope it gets to a more hopeful place.
More hope. That's good.
What I hope that lasts is the kind of, when AR came up and artists started to use it, this curiosity and the, like, actually the, like, this understanding of everything is possible. Mm-hmm. Like, I think this terminology of, like, everything is possible, we can create whatever we can imagine and envision we can create. And this is still, I think, the most exciting thing. And I hope that this is still exciting in 15 or 10 years, because it is an exciting thought. And what I would like to maybe not stay... Well, there's so many things I would also agree with, like not working for big tech giants and so on. But also, I would maybe just as one thing say QR codes. just as a, like, yeah, as a metaphor, maybe for things that are kind of there as a necessity, that are a bit bulky, that never really work well, and sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. I don't know. This bulkiness, yeah. I want to have, like, a more fluid point. Integration.
Yeah. Beautiful. That gives us... I'm just the moderator. Lucky. But I want to talk about you guys. Do you have any questions to our panelists or any... here, the first question. Or maybe a statement. I think we have a mic here. Wait. And please do introduce yourself quickly, Mike.
Well, you just did. I'm Mike. I live in Berlin with my partner, Harm Kazen. We have a small... studio called High Road Studios and whatever. But thank you. Thank you for an amazing panel, all of you guys, even the moderator. Not just a moderator. But I just wanted to know, can XR be actually XR without the hardware or the technology? At what point does it become something else? Or do we need, will we always need headsets or phones or...
Implants.
What's that?
Implants.
But, I mean, we were talking about this yesterday, like the idea of an experience without plastic or without, yeah.
Yeah, I mean... It's on, okay, sorry. So, yeah, for me, this is a really interesting question, and this piece that I was showing in 2022, I mean, I'd call it an augmented reality sound installation, but it was actually not using any type of augmented reality technology. And for me, like, my biggest question was, I was actually planning to do an augmented reality piece for iPads, and then I entered the room and I was like, oh no, I really love this room. I love the physicality of this room and I don't want people to engage with this room through a display. I want them to be free in the room and move around. So I decided, I was thinking about how can I remove this display, and I decided to place this walls of lasers as like a translucent kind of visual cue that you can step through and so on. So I was really trying to think around it, and then I programmed my own program to make out of these 3D renderings and stuff. But so in the end, of course, like still there was technology involved. But I think what I did is I was coming from the idea, what can I do with a, like really quickly with Unity and a smartphone, towards how can I like use these ideas that I get from there and transform it into a spatial artistic experience. That for me it was really important.
Would you say it was more of an interface rather than technology, or how did you approach it as the artistic exploration?
You mean the piece in the end?
Yeah, the piece in the end.
It was an experience for sure, because the only thing that the audience had was they had to get headphones. Mm-hmm. That's it. And they can walk and they're completely free. So it's and then it becomes like really much part of the experience, and not so much, yeah, you really, I think you, what I tried is to get rid of all these intermediaries.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Is there another question or provocation, thoughts, feedback? One over here. We have room for two questions.
Thank you very much. Really interesting panel. I have a provocative question. Is the, like in 2025, isn't it also a problem still that a lot of projects don't achieve, let's say, like a level of quality that they should achieve, ideally? How could this be changed? Is it the, I don't know, what is the reason for, you know, some of the average quality that we see in these works and these productions? That's not question number one. And maybe should we have more, like, not knowledgeable creators and institutions, you know, as commissioning works, and how can we achieve that there's more knowledge and that there's more like pushing the boundaries of that kind of artistic production?
Sure. I don't know. There's terrible theatre out there, and that's art form's been going on a while. So I would say. I'd like to sort of. Pivot the question, really. I understand what you're saying. I think that you have to every form or every every piece of work, there is sort of criticality and taste. And as I say, I've sat through some terrible open mic nights. And my point is, but I've seen some phenomenal work in that. And I think that in this industry, sometimes we're judging it through the wrong lens, and we have to take a step back on the criticality of it as well, which is because it hasn't quite always got the sort of foundations of making it. It's making it in a way that you're testing more things with an audience sometimes. So, you know, sometimes you're testing the interactivity, or my point is that sometimes the technology lets you down, or sometimes it's not quite there yet. But when I look at work through a critical lens in this industry, I'm like, what's it trying to say? Where is it? Like, my point is that I would just be cautious of, like, I've seen some amazing work that wasn't quite there yet or whatever. And that actually, like, particularly in theatre, you see it in preview and it's terrible, and then it shifts in press night, and then it goes. And then, but also it's about where it's placed. So if you have a show opening in Stratford and then a show comes to London, it can be a really, really different show based on the audiences and stuff like that. So more my point is, like, let's think more expansively about that question, and like, how do you equip this work for success, and where it needs to be? Where does it need to be presented? Does it have enough time to get in? Does it have enough time to be set up in the way it needs to be set up? Has it got enough testing time?
How's it framed?
How is it curated? How is it, do you know what I mean? Is it in the right framework? So I'm just sort of saying, I think sometimes XR might, you might be critical of it, but it's not been given the right framing, for example, and such like. So yeah, I just wanted to sort of push back on that thinking there.
Great. I have this thing blinking at me, so we really have to come to a close now, like very aggressively. Yeah, we are minus already. I want to thank the panelists very, very much for your insights, and thank you both also for putting on this panel. I think what I'm taking away now is really sort of the hopes for the future. The world that we don't want to live in with XR is a fragmented world, one that sort of looks at these silos, and I think you called it a club a little bit like that. And we definitely don't want to work for tech giants, and we don't want to use QR codes anymore. But what we really want to have in this industry is bold and curious artists working on this intersection who give us a critical space or a critical reflection of the present, but also the past and future. And really have a very expansive industry full of hope, which I loved. And that to be in a world where the technology doesn't limit us, but where we can actually create everything we want. And I think that's a very beautiful end to this panel. Thank you guys so much.
The panel echoed what Dr. Suzanne Jaszko highlighted so clearly, that building a future for XR is not only about technology, it's about people, structures, and long-term responsibility. We were reminded that the challenges facing cultural institutions are also openings. Chances to rethink how we work, how we support artists, and how we build institutional models that can truly embrace immersive practices. We also talked about how important it is to build international partnerships and to share resources across borders. XR becomes stronger and more sustainable when artists, museums, and cultural organizations collaborate rather than work in isolation. Another key takeaway was the need for long-term funding, support that lasts several years so artists and studios have the time they need to explore, develop, and refine immersive projects without rushing to produce quick results. And we heard once again how essential artist-led spaces are, places full of curiosity, experimentation, and dedication, which continue to push the XR field forward. A big thank you to our partner, British Council Germany, for supporting this conversation and helping us create space for these important exchanges. We hope to see you very soon. Join us at DOC Leipzig from October 26th to November 1st, 2026. You are warmly invited.